Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Adisk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Monday, September 15th, 2014. A lot of neat stuff to be talking about today. We're going to be talking about automobiles and how they're made, and GM, a little bit about GM and their lawsuits and the money that they're paying out, and there's a lot to talk about financially, too. FOMC is meeting this week, but first, good afternoon, Al.
Hello, Melody.
I think it's going to be an interesting week. I feel it in my bones.
You ever wonder about feeling in your bones? I don't know. Is that normal?
You've never heard that saying before?
Yeah, I've heard it, but I wonder about it. You know, I wonder people who say they feel things in their bones. I don't know.
It's a gut feeling. How about that one? It's a gut feeling.
Well, I don't know. That makes a little bit better sense. I've never felt anything in my bones. Like, I feel things in my gut. I feel things in my fingertips. You know, the rest of it. But feeling in my bones.
Sometimes I feel it in my bones, like when you stub your toe, it hurts. Hit your crazy bone. That hurts. So you do have feelings in your bones, but there wasn't a lot of feeling in gold, although it was to the upside a little bit. We'll take every dollar we can get, 480. 480 on the day at 1,234. We have silver up 2 at 1,873. Platinum was down 6 at 1,367. Palladium, 837. The dollar was up big. I don't know if I misread it, but I thought it was just about closing in on the 85, going over 85. It looked like it came back at 84.25. 84.25 up 0.7. Crude oil moves up slightly, 0.66 at 92.93. And just a paper markets, you know, for whatever it's worth. The Dow ends above 17,000 with some modest gains, 17,031 up 43. And the Nasdaq got hammered a little bit, just down over 1%, down 48.70 at 45.18 with the S&P basically unchanged at 1984. And the 10-year yield, 2.59%. And, the markets are pretty well where I thought they would be. We'd see the Dow teetering on 17,000, the S&P teetering around that 2,000. And, I mentioned that we'd see the NASDAQ at 5,000 hit its old high, struggling here at the 4,500 level. But not some bad predictions on my part, if I have to say so myself. Our U.S. manufacturing output today fell in August for the first time in 7 months, and there's a sharp fall in production at auto plants. Output at plants fell 0.4% in August after rising in July, and so that's interesting, and that might fall along the lines with how more car buyers are falling behind when it comes to payments on their auto loans. The auto loan delinquency rate, and we talked about this, I think, a couple of months ago, borrowers who were at least 60 days behind on their loans rose to almost a full percent in the second quarter, and that's up more than 9% from 0.87% the first quarter of the year. And even with the increase, it's still below the average, but from 2007 to 2014. However, what this shows is the trend, and I think that's important that we should be watching. Yes?
Well, they did something like subprime borrowing for automobile buyers.
Exactly.
They understand. We have learned our lesson, didn't we? Didn't they say something about those who who refuse to learn from history are destined to repeat history? We've learned from history, haven't we? Haven't we?
Have we?
Oh, no, maybe not. Maybe not. I mean, we went into...
It depends on which history.
the only history people understand is The Sopranos and
right.
One Dancing with the Stars and the last seven seasons and that sort of thing. Look, we had a Great Recession that started in 2008, and they claim it was over in 2009, but from my perspective, I think it's ongoing, and in retrospect, they will one day say, we're in another depression. It remains to be seen. There's not consensus on that point, but even in the Great Depression, there was no consensus that we were in a depression until about 1933. In retrospect, they look back and say, oh, the Depression started in 1929, but the country didn't agree whether they were or were not in the Depression until about 1933. It is not inconceivable that we could be in a Depression now, although we are incapable of perceiving it. I will sit back and say, well, things aren't that bad. Yeah, just wait. You'll see. And when the history books are written, it may be we're already in the Depression. What was my point in all this, Melody? Got me?
Well, my point is the delinquency rates remain.
Oh.
However,
well, that's consistent. We went into this because they did subprime lending on houses back in the early 2000s. And we were lending money to people who couldn't pay it back. And they knew they couldn't pay it back, but they didn't care because they thought they were so smart that we would lend the money and we would use the notes as collateral to lend more money. And the problem you've got is I think it's Say's Law, S-A-Y-S. Say's Law, and goes back to something like 1700s, maybe 1600s. I'm not sure if it's that early or not. But he's an economist who recognize that you pay for things by producing things, which means if you want to buy a new computer, you've got to produce something comparable that ultimately we change, you know, whatever things we made for the things we want. And it's ultimately kind of a barter system. And the government is essentially, they're operating on the assumption that all you need to do is purchase things. You don't need to produce anything. All you need to do is purchase things. See? And especially if you purchase it on debt, then the debt itself becomes your contribution to society, because you go out and you borrow $5,000 or $10,000 or $100,000, and the bank gets a note with your signature. And they can use that note as collateral to issue more money. And so we don't need to actually produce things to get things. All we need to do is produce more debt. Well, the whole thing is crazy. It's crazy. And what they're doing, even after they watch subprime lenders help trigger the Great Recession in 2008, here we are, 6 years later, not even that long. It's probably been four and a half, 5 years later, the banks are making loans again to subprime lenders. Now, they're not making house loans. They're making car loans. But it'll work this time, Melody. See, last time it produced the Great Recession, but this time it will stimulate the economy.
Well, there's also the subprime home markets. They have markets for new home buyers and people who don't have enough money for down payment, where they don't have to put a down payment down. It's you know, I could make the payments. I just can't save enough to come up with the down payment. And of course, those are, you know, the problems. And folks like that, they really should be renting. But delinquency rates on this automobiles remain relatively low, while auto loans, I mean, compared to where we were, auto loan, the balances keep rising. So I think that's another important part of this whole scenario, is the average loan was up 4.1% in the second quarter from the prior year. So not only are they getting these subprime rates, but they're able to borrow more money. And another interesting thing when we talk about the subprime housing market is one of your biggest offenders was Phoenix. I don't know about Houston, but Phoenix was, and of course those are the biggest increase for these auto values, or the amount of these loans was in Houston and Phoenix. So it looks like the Phoenix people are really doing it. Phoenix is doing it all over again. And when we talk about Americans going back into debt, they've added $28.2 billion to their credit cards in the second quarter of 2014. And that's the largest amount in the last 6 years, and nearly 200% more than in the second quarter of 2009. Just as we were in the depth of the so-called Great Recession. And these numbers come from CardHub.com. After paying off $32.5 billion owed during the first quarter of 2014, consumers ran up roughly 86% more debt during the following quarter. And the average credit card balance now stands at $6,800, and that's up slightly from $6,600 in the first quarter. However, the good news, it's still down from the end of 2008, about $2,000, about $1,500. So, and however, they're expecting this number to continue to rise, reaching levels that haven't been seen since the end of 2010. And they're just going to – what's interesting about this whole report is consumers – you know, we all know that our economy is based on 70% of consumers. 70% of our economy is based on spending, spending, spending. U.S. consumers –
actually, debt, but go ahead.
U.S. consumers will be roughly $1,300 away from the credit card debt tipping point.
Which is –
where minimum payments become unsustainable and delinquencies begin to skyrocket. So we're looking at people are still using their credit cards, and they're only $1,300 away from delinquencies, where they can no longer keep up with the minimum payments.
We talked about something similar back a few weeks ago, where according to the Federal Reserve, 52% of the American people, if they're faced with an emergency that costs $400 or more, they have to either sell some personal property or they have to borrow money to come up with $400 to deal with the emergency. 52%. This parallels what we're talking about.
Exactly.
We're just saying, look, the nation is broke.
But
what are you going to do? You got 50% of the people don't have it, can't come up with $400 cash.
What this tells us is that, you know, of course, people, Americans, are living beyond their means. And why are they doing this all of a sudden? And you can thank Wall Street, because they're feeling confident about their job security and economic recovery, because they see the stock markets, whether they're involved in them or not, they see the numbers, and that gives them the confidence. We already know, Bernanke says, we need to have higher stock markets. It provides confidence to the buyer. And as long as they have that confidence, they will be out there buying. Doesn't matter that they're only $1,300 away from you know, devastation.
I know.
And so, again, it's signs that we're not far away from something breaking in this economy. And we continue to see signs this week, Al. The Fed meets on speculation. There's a lot of speculation over the possible changes. And what's amazing is this was put out by the Associated Press, and they talk about two words. They're going to be looking for the Federal Reserve, their policy statement, and everyone is going to be on high alert for two words, considerable time.
Yeah.
The presence or absence of that phrase will trigger a rush to assess the likely timing of the Fed's when they begin to start their first increase in interest rates since 2008. My question, Al, is if your investments are based on two words, considerable time, you would have to be insane or love living on the edge. I mean, I don't see how folks can, I mean,
that's what's going to determine what's going on in the economy is whether or not Janet Yellen says considerable time. You know, this is, I don't know, it's kind of like the N word. It's something they're going to talk about the C word or the CT word. And nobody will say considerable time, but they may talk about the CT word. Nobody, you know, this is just insane. It's nonsense.
Crazy.
It's crazy talk. What if she says ibbity bobbity boo? Will that make everybody's pumpkin turn into a carriage or something like that? This whole thing is just nuts.
And but hey, Al, don't buy gold or silver. Don't get protected against those two words, considerable time.
Yeah, no.
I mean, it's just really, it's insanity. And people are crazy if they're not out there buying gold and silver. I mean, I don't know how many areas, I don't know how many reports and videos and everything that people have to see and watch until they get the idea that, hey, folks, when it happens, it's going to happen quick. We don't know when it's going to happen. Anybody who gives predictions and so forth, they're just guessing and hoping they might be right. But, I mean, you have
the world will turn on whether or not an elderly lady says or doesn't say considerable time. I mean, this is, you know, people talk about Groundhog Day. And they say, oh, these people are crazy. They look to see if a groundhog comes out of the ground or not. If it sees its shadow and goes back in, that means we have six more weeks of winter or whatever. I don't know what the... All right. You think Groundhog Day is stupid? This is going to be Janet Yellen Day. And she is either... Will she or will she not say a considerable time, referring to a considerable time before they raise interest rates? If she says it, the illusion can continue a while longer. If she doesn't say it, everybody goes, oh, my gosh, she didn't say a considerable time. The economy's going to go. The markets are going to go. They're going to collapse. And can you imagine the stress on Janet Yellen? How would you like to be chairman of the Federal Reserve?
I'd love it.
Knowing. Think you'd love it. You'd have everybody blaming you for everything that happened. And if you said...
Who cares?
Time,
who cares? You're
like, my gosh, I'm not politically correct. I didn't mean to say considerable time. I didn't mean it. No. Scratch that. I didn't know if she said considerable time. I heard her. Markets are going to have to fall 500 points. Good God.
I know. But people who have their hard-earned money in markets like that, they have to be insane.
Well, I understand that.
Yep. They have to be insane. Take precautions, folks. That's all we can say. And we're going to talk about food stamps also. I'm sorry, the supplemental nutrition assistance. That just cracks me up. You know, call it for what it is, food stamps, you know. Oh, now, supplemental nutrition assistance. We do have a caller, Al.
Yep, but we got about a minute until we, less than a minute before we take our break some commercials. So Joe's calling from Arkansas. Fine. Joe, why don't you hold on for a few minutes, and we will talk to you after we return from the break.
I can go ahead and start this. You have in June 2014, there were 46, almost 46 and a half million recipients on the food stamp program. And the number of recipients was up 270,000 since the previous month in May. These were June numbers. The number of households that are participating in this program has also increased as well from the 22 million that's participating in May 2014 to the 22.7 in June 2014. And that's an increase of the households of 123,000. So, again, these are signs. These programs are growing and growing. And the true sign is we don't have the money to continue to pay these entitlements. Our country is bankrupt.
And that's the problem. How much longer can the illusion be sustained? And the answer is unknown. We don't know how much longer, but it is an illusion. And it seems to me just common sense. You look at it, you know this is not going to hold together indefinitely. Something's got to give. We just don't know when. We're going to take a break for some commercial announcements. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. Please stay tuned.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate for those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad spectrum immune boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Call Apothecary Herbs toll free 866-229-3663 or online thepowerherbs.com. That's 866-229-3663 or thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver, 1-800-375-4188. The perfect product for people who haven't lost their minds. What we got, Melody?
And to keep you from losing your mind.
Asking people.
What?
You know, they're talking about committing people. It should be one of the questions they say. Do you invest in gold? And they said, no, I don't invest in gold. You must be crazy. Let's lock this person up. On the other hand, if you invest in gold, no, he's probably okay. You know, we'll watch and see. What's next, Melody?
We've got some small bags of 90% half dollars and $50 face value, 90%. They're beautiful coins. This price includes shipping, $760 for $90 face value, and you're looking at about, oops, hold on here, folks. You're looking at about 35 ounces of silver for $760. Not a bad deal.
Did you say $50 face value or $90 face value?
I'm sorry. $50 face value. You confused me. 90%,
no, I didn't confuse you.
90% silver. You weren't listening.
I didn't say anything.
You weren't listening.
Yeah, I was listening. I think you said 90, so I thought,
90% silver, $50 face value, half dollars. Runs about 35 ounces of silver, $760, and that includes your shipping.
Well,
how's that?
Good. I'm glad we've got that straightened out.
And, you know, and I've seen some of my competitors, or I saw some of my competitors online. They sell a lot of the Walking Liberties at very, very high prices. And when you could get just regular 90%, whether they be Kennedy Hams or the Ben Franklins or even the Walking, you should be paying the same price. You don't have to pay the excess premiums for Walking Liberties just because they're Walking Liberties. I mean, it's one thing to pay 50 cents more, but for a full bag, you're paying thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars more. So, you know, don't fall into that trap. In the same way with Mercury Dimes. You don't have to pay excess premiums for Mercury Dimes. You just buy Roosevelt Dimes. Because when you sell that Mercury Dime back or you sell that Walker back, you're going to get the same price.
So you're going to get the 90% silver price? That's what you're telling me?
That's all you're going to get.
Mm-hmm.
So be smart when you're making these purchases. And if anybody has any questions, just call me at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188.
I think we got a caller. Joe from Arkansas is on the line. Hello, Joe. How are you doing? What do you got for us?
Yeah, I'm all right. How are you, Al?
Good.
Okay. And what I've got for you is last week you were talking with James Corbett. And the subject came up about the United Nations. You were talking about that with him, and whether the United States Nations is kind of like just a debating society, or is a toothless tiger, or has any real power, that kind of thing. And I wanted to put this in. I remember back in the 90s when Clinton was president, and Clinton was bombing Serbia, and they were calling it a NATO operation. They said that NATO was doing this, not the United States. The United States was doing it on behalf of NATO. And this local talk show that I listened to on the radio, they were asking, what is NATO? What is NATO? They were trying to figure out what NATO is. So I went to the encyclopedia, looked up NATO, and I read the NATO Charter. And the NATO Charter says that NATO is an organization organized under the United Nations Charter, and that everything NATO does is for, on behalf of, and in pursuit of the goals and purposes of the United Nations. So whenever you hear of a NATO military operation, apparently that is the United Nations. Apparently NATO is the army of the United Nations.
What do you make of that?
What do I make of it?
Yeah.
Well,
I don't know. It's one of those things where it suggests that because that information is not widely known, it suggests that the UN may be trying to maintain a lower profile than is in fact true. We're hearing that NATO is the one that's defending Europe, and NATO is the one that's dancing with Russia and the rest of it. And what you're suggesting is, in fact, NATO is just a spear carrier, a front, a pretext for the UN. And what does that mean to Russia?
Yeah.
What does that mean to Russia if NATO is perceived to be an adversary to Russia under current circumstances? All right, at least a potential adversary. Then Russia should know what you're talking about. Does Russia think NATO is the bad guy? Or does Russia think the UN is the bad guy? Or is this whole thing just a puppet show?
Well, what it would seem to imply to me is that the United Nations has this pretext, has this appearance, puts on this show of being everybody's friend and, you know, wanting to do good by everybody, whereas NATO is more the military force of a specific group of countries, you know, a specific power bloc of the world, you might say. And so so it seems like the United Nations is trying to pretend to be everybody's friend, where in reality it represents a certain specific power bloc that wants to control the world.
I think you're right. And the implications of what you're telling us is that NATO is more dangerous than, or excuse me, the UN is more dangerous. It comes along like, you know, a steel fist, but it's encased in a velvet glove. They want to show us the velvet glove. But you're saying, in fact, inside that velvet glove, we find a steel fist that may be fomenting war. You know, and it's interesting, because insofar as they control the UN's charter, they say they're there to promote global peace. I'm sure that's one of their objectives. I haven't read their charter in a long time, but I'm sure that's one of their primary objectives, to promote world peace. How is that consistent with operating NATO? Now, we could sit back and say NATO is a defensive organization designed to defend Europe against originally the former Soviet Union. But is NATO defensive or offensive? And if it's offensive, does that indicate that the UN is here to promote world peace? Or is it here to promote at least selective wars?
Well, I guess NATO is whatever the commander is, the people in charge of NATO. I guess it is whatever they want it to be at the time for the purposes that they want to accomplish at the moment. And
I might have said NATO when I meant UN. I'm not sure if I said NATO when I meant the UN, but you know, again, NATO is the army, the military end of it, and UN is, oh, we're peace, kumbaya, kumbaya, you know. And the Bible, and the leaders say peace, but there is no peace. And the UN says peace, or at least that's their object, is peace, and nevertheless they're putting NATO on point to maybe give Russia a hard time. What do you make of all this, Joe? Does any of it make sense? Do you believe any of it? Do you just understand that it's... Do you think it's all crazy, or do you think there is real genius behind the scenes? Are things out of control? Are we just dealing with chaos? Or is there real control behind the scenes that's orchestrating to achieve a goal that many of us can't even imagine?
Well, it looks to me like there's a diabolically clever plan to accomplish this world government. And the United Nations is set up to appear to be a benevolent organization that just wants to help everybody and do good. But in reality, it's the most oppressive and tyrannical organization, you know, that the world has ever seen, you know, wanting dominant, complete dominance of the world. And it looks to me like, there's that famous letter from Albert Pike to Giuseppe Mazzini, you know, written in 1873 about the plan for the three world wars. You know, I'm sure you know about it. Probably the listeners all know about it. But anyway, they said that their plan for the third world war, which would be around the beginning of the 21st century, was to get the whole so-called Judeo-Christian world fighting with the whole Muslim world, and probably they'll figure out a way to bring the Buddhists and Hindus on it, too. You know, basically what they wanted to do was to create a horrendous, devastating war that all the major religions would be involved in, so at the end of it, the people of the world would be completely disgusted, disenchanted, and fed up, and, you know, disappointed.
With religion or with war?
With war and with all the major religions. And then they would, then the secret societies would bring out Luciferism and say, this is the only way we can have world peace, and the people would go for it. You know, that's the plan, as I understand it. And it looks like, you know, it looks like they're working that plan.
Have you ever read any of that beyond that letter? Have you read any of Pike's work?
I've read a little bit of his Morals and Dogma book. It was kind of incomprehensible to me, so I didn't read all that much of it.
You have to figure, I've never read his stuff, and I don't really want to. I don't like the idea of even reading his stuff, but you have to suppose this guy's genius is almost unparalleled. or at least to whoever he represents, their genius. I don't know who the genius is. Well, if he's predicting a third world war of this that is consistent, he's predicting it back about the time of just after the American Civil War. He's predicting a third world war that wouldn't happen until 130, 40, 50 years later. And he appears to be on target. You got to give this guy some kind of credit. That's a little bit spooky, don't you think?
Sure is, yeah. Yeah, you wonder how could anybody have that much insider foresight. You know, it's kind of uncanny that anybody's mind could see, you know, that much how things would actually develop. Yeah,
well, Nostradamus predicted World War III back in, the 1500s.
Well, the question you get into is whether we're dealing with someone who has the gift of prophecy, or are we dealing with someone who is a spokesman for a system that has sufficient control. Is this happening because he's a prophet and he can see this is God's will and God's going to cause this third world war and we're going to try to take advantage of it? Is he prophet or is he commander? Where he's saying, this is the system we've got and we're going to ratchet this thing up and it won't happen until 100 years after I'm dead and gone. But nevertheless, we're setting this in motion now. Do you see what the difference I'm trying to illustrate here?
He might have been something of both. I don't know. I really don't know. It could be that this whole plan, you know, is not just a earthly plan. You know, to my mind, you know, there's quite an interaction between the spirit world and the earth world. And some people do have, you know, insight into and communication with the spirit world. And could be that this plan, you know, somewhat comes from the spirit world, and Albert Pike was kind of an agent for it, on the material earth, something like that. You know, that's one thing that comes to my mind as a possibility.
Well, whatever the answer is, it's certainly strange, and it parallels to some degree Nostradamus. The only difference is Nostradamus made predictions, I don't know, centuries in advance, and certainly didn't have any control. Everybody gets that. These things aren't happening because Nostradamus said so. He just anticipated certain events, or at least he appears to have anticipated certain events as a prophet. But Pike, I'm not sure if we're dealing with a prophet or we're dealing with evidence of control.
Well, I don't think it really...
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
One thing about Pike's prophecies is that our Pike's letter, you know, describing three world wars, you know, it's much more detailed and specific than anything Nostradamus put out. You know,
oh,
Nostradamus
I understand
put
that.
Out these,
well, yeah, but you can always create things, though,
to
too.
What they really mean. Yeah.
I mean, you could create things, too. I mean, you know.
Well, we live in interesting times. I've said it a bunch of times. Whatever gets us, it won't be boredom. All right? Nobody's going to die of boredom. This is strange. And the world just gets curiouser and curiouser, and not in the sense of Alice in Wonderland. It gets just getting weirder and weirder, and what do you do?
Well, if you're interested in curious things, I can tell you another one. It's very relevant to next year, and that's
You've got about 90 seconds.
Oh, okay. In the early 2000s, there was a man that claimed to be a time traveler from 2035. His name was John Teeter, and he posted a lot of stuff on the internet in the early 2001, and then disappeared. He said he went back to 2035. Anyway, he said there was going to be a civil war in this country, and that it would end in 2015 when Russia nuked all the major cities of the United States. And here we are going into 2015, and it looks like we're headed for some kind of trouble with Russia. So that's kind of
That may be, but we haven't seen that civil war he was predicting.
That's
you know, if you're saying he's predicting first a civil war, they've got, 4 months or some 3 months left in this year to get that civil war going, and I don't see that happening in this country.
I mean, there's all kinds of predictions and things that you can follow, and you know what? To me, I read them, but I really don't pay a lot of attention to them.
You almost can't.
And I think lots of times it's a waste of time because they're never...
Unlike my own predictions, Melody, most of the other people's predictions are mistaken. Now, I'm going to give you an example right now of my predictive capacity. I'm going to bet that we're going to start hearing commercials on this program, or at least the bumper music, in about 10 seconds. Maybe even 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Ta-da! Thank you, Joe. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be right back.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in an untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate in those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad-spectrum immune-boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Or take your chances with the bad boys. Call Apothecary Herbs toll-free, 866-229-3663, or online, thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival. Programs brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver, 1-800-375-4188 for all gold and silver coin needs. Got an article here on the world's first 3D printed car unveiled in Chicago. I saw the video on this thing. It's reported by WGN TV up in Chicago. And the world's first 3D, this was at Chicago's McCormick Place, first 3D printed car named Strati, S-T-R-A-T-I, Italian for layers, took its first test drive. There are less than 50 parts in this car, said one of the people who helped manufacture or make the car. And they put it together. The car was assembled in something like 44 hours at the show. All right? There are non-printable parts like the electric motor, the lights, glass windshield were added, but the body of the car was made with a 3D printer. And the car itself turns out to be something like a dune buggy. You know, you may remember dune buggies out of the 60s, 70s. It looks a little like a dune buggy, but it's made out of a carbon fiber filament, which means the shell on this thing is going to be very, very strong. All right, you're going to have a hard time bending it, scuffing, scratching it. It's made with carbon fiber. It's part of the reason why it's relatively expensive. The car will start at $18,000, go up to $30,000. And for them, initially, it'll only travel about 40 miles an hour with a range of 120 miles on one charge. It's an electric car, right? 120 miles and maximum 40 miles per hour. Now, that means it's only for city use. Right, you can't take this thing out on the highway. It's not for you can drive it around on your farm if you want to. It may function like a dune buggy in that. Still, the point behind this that just astonishes me, it amazes me. I look at this and it points to a very strange time we're entering into. You know, I'm much concerned that although some industries are reportedly relocating back into the United States, some of the industries that went over to third world countries are coming back. Right? Heard reports. Some of them are coming back. I won't say it's a big movement, but some of them are coming back and more may follow. And you would think that when these industries come back, they're going to bring the jobs back. They left this country to take advantage of cheap labor in China or the third world, and when the industries left, they took a lot of our jobs along with them. Now the industries may be coming back, but they're not bringing jobs back. They're coming back with the idea that they will reestablish their factories and they will replace much of what used to be assembly line workers are going to be replaced with robots, which creates a terrible problem. We may get the industries back, but what are we going to do for jobs in this country? I mean, there is a permanent unemployment problem in this country that it's not going to be easily resolved unless we can create jobs. And how do we do it without an industrial base? Now, these corporations are coming back, and they're saying, ha, 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 we can use robots so we don't need you people anymore to be laborers for us. And they can cut their costs and, in theory, make greater profits. And competition will drive the corporations to do this and install even more robots and hire even fewer people. And they will establish costs, but competition will keep driving their profits down. But who's going to buy their products? If we don't have jobs, how do we buy the products? And the answer is some sort of glorified welfare. How this is going to work is something of a mystery to me. I don't understand how this can be happening. But then I see this report and this video on a 3D printed car. And this car was essentially manufactured by a machine that could fit in your garage. And it creates what we're seeing is with something like 3D printing. It parallels the robotic technology that the corporations are using to replace the people on the assembly line. And here we have these 3D printers that are effectively replacing the corporations. We might sit back and say, hooray, Ford is going to bring some plants back that it located in China, and it's going to bring them back to Detroit. And except the problem is they're going to build cars with robots rather than employees in Detroit. So Ford's not helping Detroit. It's not going to employ Detroit. But we've got another technology, 3D printing, that essentially renders the corporations and the assembly lines irrelevant. The corporations are rendering the jobs on the assembly line. That's irrelevant. They don't need the people. But the people with things like 3D printers don't need the corporations. And we were talking about this earlier. If you're not following this business with 3D printing, this thing is moving fast. They are building houses right now with 3D printers. They go out and they build a 3D printer on the lot. They set up rails next to where on two sides of where the house is going to be. They set up a gantry over it, and with computer numerical control, they just move a nozzle that deposits concrete on layer on layer on layer. They can put up a house with this stuff. Build a concrete house that's reinforced right on up to and including the roof with a 3D printer. Building cars with this. What is going to happen? This is pointing toward some kind of an extraordinary economy where we don't even need the major corporations. They don't need us to work there. We don't need them to produce. How is this economy going to hold together, Melody? What are we going to do? I think the only jobs that are going to be left are a radio talk show and selling gold coins.
Well, you know, I read, a lot of these factories coming back to the States certainly are image building. You know, they want the American people to think that, they're truly American companies, and because they need the American consumer. And it's all about the American consumer. And certainly they play a very big part. And a lot of these corporations say they open up these small plants and so forth just to image build. So, and we've talked it time and time again where, yeah, robots are going to be taking over people's jobs. It's really that simple. And, you want to talk science fiction. Hey, we've known this for a long, long time. You know, robots will eventually take over and so forth. So, again, the signs, the people, you have a mass baby boomers that are aging, and you'll certainly I hear you.
Well, I'm not a baby boomer. I'm aging, but I'm not a baby.
You're not a baby boomer.
No, I'm too old to be a baby boomer.
You are?
Uh-huh. I think the baby boom started a year after I was born. It was kind of a celebration. They said, oh, guess what? Al was born. So they said,
let's have a baby. Let's have some more. Yeah, and you're going to have a lot of folks. So some jobs, it'll distort the picture. You know, folks won't get a clean picture of exactly what the, employment is because you're going to have these robots taking over and, even down to your fast food restaurants and you name it. People are going to be replaced. They want a smaller population.
Where will they go? I understand.
Look up. Look up.
How do we pay for our food? And one other point. You know, we talked earlier, Say's Law, you got to produce something to get something.
It's called supplemental nutrition assistance.
Only you don't have to produce anything. All you have to do is eat. And they talk about 70% of the economy is based on consumers, but I think what they really mean is 70% is based on debtors. Again, the problem is not simply that the object is not so much that we consume. The object is that we go into debt because they can use this debt as a basis for making bonds. They can package this debt together and combine it into bonds that they can sell and make derivatives and God knows what all they're doing. But 70% is based on debt. How can that work? How can this continue to work? And what happens when it stops? If we're not producing things because they don't need us on the assembly lines, what do we do?
And we talked about this prior to the program, and we got a note in from Barry. He says, who has any money to buy any of this 3D printer stuff? And I agree. Yeah, it's going to be a controlled market if it's going to. And
it's not just a question of buying. You can build them. They're not that complex.
But you need money to build them.
Yeah, you need some. I get that. But nevertheless, they're not that complex. And I was talking, again, it's not just they've built a car with these things. They're building homes with these things. Homes, entire homes are being constructed with 3D printers. This is just an astonishing technology, and it's the sort of thing that points to an instability, a destabilization, a certain amount of confusion, and even fear. What's going to happen here, Melody? You know, there was a time when you could go into your grandfather started the business and your father worked the business and you were expected to go into the business. And there was a time when that was true. Right now, the business could span generations of the same family. Right now, I'm not sure how many businesses can last 10 years before they are being threatened by technological advances, all right, by new technology. The only way the businesses can hold together right now is perhaps if they've got enough money to buy out their competitors' new technology or buy enough congressmen to restrict competitors' new technology? I don't know, but the world is changing, and it's not a good place to be ignorant. It's not a good place to be unintelligent. You better be able to think on your feet the way the world is unfolding right now, in my opinion. I don't think this is, and if you're not that bright and you didn't get a decent education, you are coming to a moment where this is going to be a scary place. Or at least so it seems to me. We'll find out.
So when you hear people talk about the concern for their children, well, not their children so much, but their grandchildren, they will have a difficult time. They will have a very difficult time.
I don't think the world's getting any easier. I don't, regardless of people's optimism and confidence.
Technology moves so slow. The only money that's going to be buying this technology stuff is if people can wear it, if they can implant it in their brain so they think that they're going to act smarter or be smarter, if they can put it on their wrist, if they can
Nobody
use it to make
to
a picture,
smarter.
If they can take a picture with it. That's the only thing. There's 4 million
selfies.
People.
We like to take selfies, Melody.
I mean, hey,
we're going to have,
and who's gonna have
have
the money?
We're going to have a camera embedded in one of the fingers in our hand where we can just point at ourselves.
The technology
one of our
is fine and grand,
snapper.
But I really don't believe people. I mean, people have the money to buy Apple. They had 4 million advanced orders of its new iPhone in the first 24 hours. There was, what, 9 million of the iPhone 5s that were sold in 3 days. I mean, it's like that's where people's money go to. They could really care less about anything else. That's the mentality of the people.
That's the mentality of some of the people. It's not the mentality of all of the people. And this, you know, again, that 3D printing is something extraordinary. It's moving ahead by leaps and bounds, and you can see the difference.
Yeah,
I've been just
like
paying attention
to the automobiles.
For
look at your automobiles.
Months.
Look at your automobiles that have the battery automobiles and the electric. How far, look how long they've been working on that.
Well, they've had them for, I'll bet, the first battery
powered automobiles. And how many people have them?
Century old.
And
well,
how many people have them?
Not many, not yet. Yeah, but that's, again, that has something to do with the technology, and it also has something to do with restrictions that have been made by getting rich people who manufacture automobiles and use petroleum to fuel themselves and the rest of it. They have helped to hold down the advances in alternative energy. It's not just the free market that has succeeded in bringing forth. There's been restrictions in the same way that they've manipulated the price of gold. They've manipulated other markets.
But it's the acceptance or the consumer out there who are willing to buy them and put the money, people that do have the money. I mean, they're not flying off the shelf. I mean, how many do you see? You do see a lot of you see more of the Priuses on the road. But the Tesla, I mean, those are, what, $50,000 automobiles?
75 start
up. So, you know,
start at 75 and go to 125.
GM failed at it. You know, a lot of these companies have failed, although GM has other problems. But you're going to have the public accept it and have the money to pay for these things. Technology might be there. That doesn't mean it's going to be.
Have the money, and that's
doesn't mean that it's going to be
as successful. That's one of my questions in my previous little point. If the corporations, if we start making our own automobiles with 3D printers, for example, the stuff has moved just leaps and bounds in a short period of time. Where it's going to be a year from now or 3 years from now is impossible to predict. But if we start producing our own, we don't need the corporations. Corporations don't need to employ us. Where's the money coming from to buy anything? We're coming to a time where you got to produce your own. It's like going back into medieval times. You're going to have to generate your own printer and become a Gutenberg. Strange, strange times. And we will talk more about strange times tomorrow and interesting times and some perhaps even funny times, I guess. But right now, strange times. I'm Alfred Addis here on Financial Survival with Melody Cederstrom. We'll be back tomorrow. In the meantime, I hope you'll tune in tomorrow. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? Still, there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad.